I was about 18, 19 years old when I had my first child. New Mexico had the largest infant death rate in the United States. And I don't know, I must have read a lot. I don't know how I was always so informed because I lived in a country that was, you know, I don't remember us even taking the daily paper. Anyway, I felt real strong about that, and evidently a few others did too, and we had got involved very politically. I remember I was not old enough to vote because it was 21 then, so we worked very hard for that and scared the hell out of it. His name was Senator Travis, too, I think. Maybe Congressman, maybe. Dennis Travis, who was happened to be a relative of my husband's mother's side of the family. They tied in there someplace. And we threatened his feet to get that bill passed at Charles Health. You know, they got the health, the free health clinic, which was cut down. We went to the death rate in New Mexico. Lately, you know, it was, I don't know where it stands now. So I should step back on some of that and see. But there wasn't any problem with getting me involved in that because I had a new baby myself. And I was very, very concerned. And, very unpopular with the family, of course, at that time, but then I think everybody saw later on that he was trying to really let them unseat Dennis Strauss. He couldn't have done it anyway, but we did get him to pass his legislation and get the health clinic, which is very important now. I think they call them well baby clinics now. I don't remember what title they had at that time, but they certainly were needed and they were very important to the children born in New Mexico at that time. And that's been 40-something years ago, because I'm sure my daughter is about 40. And she wouldn't tell me the truth, but I know she's over 40, and she was born in 1936 or 37. So that's how long ago. And I think that, and since that time, I don't know, I just think that's unfair. Like I think we talk a lot about justice, but there's very little of it. And equality. Equality is the one that kind of bothers me the most, because most things are extremely unequal, especially in the court. You say equal. There's nothing equal about a person that depends on a public defender and a person that's able to spend millions of dollars on an attorney who has his reputation at stake. He's going to make sure that he doesn't get a conviction, or that his client doesn't get a conviction. And I often wonder, how in the world could you call that equal? The public defender is usually a young attorney. But, they're better than nothing, as we always have to settle for, better than nothing. I'm not condemning them in any way, but how could you call that equal? There isn't equal at all. Some of them are very efficient attorneys, and some of them are not very efficient attorneys. Some of them are just beginning and really don't know the score at all. How could you compare that type of... I just don't see that. And that's true, I think, throughout most everything that we talk about as equal. Talking about equal opportunities in housing. Well, they're equal, I guess, if you can move to Beverly Hills, if you're in that income level. But housing is very unequal. I think it probably always has been. The opportunity for housing always has been. And I would feel maybe jobs the same way. Certainly a person that's financially able to prepare for a well-paying job, it couldn't be considered equal to the person who wasn't able to pay the schooling fee and prepare for a well-paying job. So why do we say equal? Because it isn't equal. It isn't equal at all. And that has always bothered me, and I think that's why I'm very willing to must be speaking anyway. It always finds me the opportunity to involve, and I really am trying real hard to remember how did I come involved in CORE and UCRC. I really don't remember, and I have to say that I don't remember. I truly don't, because I was very much involved. And when Mrs. Lewis moved to Venice, I'm the one that got her involved. And I don't even remember how we found each other. We weren't close next door neighbors or anything, but we would have to be. She lived several streets over. And I really don't, I have to say, I just cannot remember. I cared for not. I was already involved in UCIC when I was working with a very close friend of mine. His son's kicked off over there. He's quite famous for one thing or another from time to time. In fact, I'm the one that tried to get her involved, but she never, she certainly supported civil rights very strongly, but she never would walk a picket line. So I don't know unless I'm passing by and somebody says, come on over and get in the line, and I did, I really don't recall, but I certainly would. I am driving by a lot of times, and I see a picket line, and I stop and give them a few crumbs just to keep my hand in. We don't do too much picketing anymore. I think maybe we should. I think we're losing out. We're falling backwards. And I think maybe we should go around with this little stamp and do some more voter education, too. And there were no funds for that. That was all volunteers. People, in fact, we worked with, we were mostly young professional people. We worked walks, they say to go to walks now, but we used to just walk real late at night, and then we said everybody had a job, and we went after hours on Saturday and Sunday. We had a lot of volunteers come out. We had a lot of student teachers, secretaries, and professional people. I've forgotten how the old office job was. He was a director of some kind of a boss or something. You know. County offices or something like that. He was a wonderful human being. He died of cancer. He was the most patient person in the world. I admire patience because I don't have that myself. I guess, but I certainly admire patience. And he was the most patient person in the world. In fact, I saw a picture, I don't know whether here or whether I was looking at something else, of Sam Block's little baby that lived with me. Well, she was a little baby then. She was a big teenager now. She lived with me when they first came. I don't know how they knew me, because they came from Mississippi to my house. How we got acquainted, but they were very active in the civil rights movement. I guess it was quite an interesting world, because a lot of the civil rights people from the South used to stay with me when they came to Los Angeles. But usually they came on a fundraising, a voter registration, or some big activity that we had. And I don't know how that came about either, because I certainly didn't meet them down south. And that was Sam Block and Peggy's first time to come to Los Angeles when they came that time. And I don't know how they ended up with me, I really don't.
You said that you were in on the beginning
of the right, right. The organizing, everything. It started off in court. It was a coalition of all the civil rights activities. This is where we defeat ourselves, I think. There always has to be some kind of rivalry there. Court got a lot of publicity, and they were, I don't want to use the word irresponsible, but they laughed at old, I don't know, I don't want to say conservative either, but it means dependable on them. They were real good, and there was some rivalry there, and there was a little more of this kind of person. And of course, this NAACP core wanted to, you know, push all the old fogies aside. This is it. This is the new thing. And Earl Walters was able to make everybody see that we needed core, we needed NAACP, we needed a United Civil Rights Committee was the object that brought them all together, connected all of the activities there. Everybody's activity was equally important. And you have to have that old, staid, old-fashioned, ongoing, day-to-day, it has to be there. You can all go out and have this big, beautiful thing, and maybe you make a lot of gains, and you get a lot of publicity, and make a lot of gains. But if somebody's not staying there, and doesn't keep the thing going day-to-day, forget it, you know. That's all forgotten in a while. And they were wonderful people. I guess Core eventually did just die off, because, I don't know what the hell that is, but they were wonderful people. And they were ready, you know, they were the warriors, and they went to the South before UCRC ever got around to getting enough money to get a plane and go. Most of our people paid their own way, but there was money for the planes that went down there. And I'm sure Mr. Kingsley and the ACP's efforts and churches, different churches. But I'm trying to think of this young. He was a, he wasn't young anyway. He was probably 30, 40 years old. He wasn't young compared to the rest of us at that time. I know he was the first Freedom Rider, one of the first 21, I think it was 21, that went down there. I'm sure his picture must be in those pictures that Howard took. And I hope that I haven't let him get away from me. I can't imagine where they would be. But then every once in a while, I'd straighten the house a little bit and put things in order, and that's always a mistake. I can never find anything. But they think they're very important to me.
Were there any other
members
that
were
with you?
Oh, yeah. You know, Glenn Moore, the new assemblywoman? I don't know how new it's been. She got elected very recently, though, hasn't she? Well, actually, he was her boyfriend, but I guess he didn't flaunt things like that at that time. Rhett, I can't think what Rex's last name was either. They were very much, you all together in UCI. And they all went on, like I said, at least most of some of them that I, you know, hear from through the news. Back then, now, then was very much. They went on this plane trip that I'm talking about, Glenn and Rex. Sure, they didn't sit close together down south, though. He's right, of course. There were a lot of heart people there. In fact, at all those rallies and gatherings and things, there was always something going on, some big thing going on. Usually at the churches in the central section of Los Angeles, Kenneth Hahn was always there. They were invited, you know, as speakers and stuff. Mary Yorty was invited to every one, I guess, the majority of them. Not one time did Mayor Yorty ever make an appearance, but Kenneth Hahn was always there. I have a lot of admiration for him. I don't know if he remembers those times or not. And he did walk a picket line with some of those great biggies. He was in there for a little while, too. I remember if he remembers them.
About some of those picket lines. You could be arrested
many times. Well, you know, I heard of the kind of rest of the last. You don't, you know, that's all fine. They don't, they would be foolish. Well, not always either, but you have to have it controlled, otherwise you can't just turn people loose. It was a very controlled, well, sometimes court would get a little bit out of hand. That's sort of, you know, some of the problems came in. They had, you know, they had, like I say, they were young. And they were, but you have to make sure that not going to let people go out and do it, right? And you're not going to let them get hurt, if possible at all. You have very few. Sometimes the police do that. You know, speaking of them. But it has to be quite controlled. At least the ones I know, I was involved in. You're saying there with either child. If you decide ahead, if you want to, you're going to have an arrestable action. It depends upon what, you know, the head feel would be the most effective. I think mass ticketing is very effective, but it loses its, sort of loses its value if you're forced to continue. So you have to have something that's ongoing. Believe you me, that ongoing is, I think it gets results, but it's very hard to physically. Well, your feet get tired, I'll tell you that. Your feet walk 1,000 miles. To walk from, well, that one that, I think there's a picture, a bigger picture of that. Now, that would have been from probably the city hall or someplace downtown all the way to walk. That's a long, long walk. You can consider it a long way. There's a lot of that. We haven't been in a good ticket line for a long time. We don't have that time anymore. And the walk to the Board of Education, they usually started way off from here. Those were big marches, too. Yeah.
What they were.
Yeah, not here. Well, first of all, integrating the Board of Education was, I'm assuming, the main, one of the main thrusts. Some kind of quality education. Maybe somebody got fired or something. That always brought out a big minority teacher. And we have some of the march over. I don't recall. I remember Rita Moreno, the actress. Yes, quite a few of them marched. One time I was trying to think what was the main objective of that. Must have been to integrate the school board, because it certainly was all white at that time. And then we got Reverend Jones and the one who's the ambassador disappointed to Mexico, ambassador to Mexico. Dr. Nava. Yeah, he was very close to us during his campaign, and I never seen saw Dr. Nava after he was elected, never corresponded with him or anything. But that's wrong too, because our paths just never crossed for some reason. But we were very close to him. We did a lot of coffee hours, and Mrs. Morcetti lived up the street in Spanish City. We hauled her all over Los Angeles, East Los Angeles, Central Los Angeles, all this under town with speaker system. Saying common votes for Dr. Nava in Spanish and English. We really worked hard in his campaign. It was very rewarding, because I don't remember a Latin having ever been elected to the school board, I guess, since Spain, Mexico had California, probably. I don't recall. I'm sure he was the first one in a long time, but I think he was very successful in that there were two Latino and a black person. But then I think what happens there is the people fall away and don't give them enough support. Somehow or the other, you say you got them there, now they're supposed to form a miracle for us, and it doesn't turn out that way. You have to have a lot of support, and I think it kind of fell away. And people get real upset. You can't always vote your conscience when you're part of a board. And I think that's something where we don't educate the people enough. I think we do that same thing with the President of the United States. It's like the President waves his arm and this is what happens, and it isn't true. And I think that the history books in the schools have failed to prepare the people to what to expect when they elect someone. You do have to vote for the other side, to get them to vote for your side, because there has to be some kind of a vote taken. You're not down there all by yourself making decisions. And I really think that we don't prepare the people to accept the facts, which is exactly what they are. But you would hope, and certainly a lot of good came in that the beginning of bilingual education. And I say the beginning because bilingual education in Los Angeles is a joke to me. We got the beginning. We haven't moved any further from that. We're really not doing anything with it. And I'm not, I don't mean that as a slur against what little bit has been accomplished. We've took a lot of effort, but I think that we don't want to, everyone's saying we have bilingual education, but we don't want to get snowed under that. They're going to begin to say we have it too, and we know we don't. And not get caught in that trap that we would say we have at least started, and it certainly has been a large change, a lot. A difference in the attitude towards the Spanish and the need for the Spanish language in California. And if we ever get the census straightened out where they will honestly count the citizens, it certainly will show the need for the Spanish language. And I don't know why we fight it. We stole California from Mexico anyway. So why would we be so worried about that? But I think that we should teach more practical subjects in school, so you elect one minority to a board of, 8 or 10. There's very little that minority can do without the support of the other board members, so he has to support their cause to get them to support his cause, and don't just condemn him and say, we got one up there, he isn't any good, or she isn't any good, because it just doesn't work that way. We expect too much. We really do. Maybe we can start marching on the Board of Education and do something about that. I think we're ready for some more marching. Now back to the war.
I want to ask you about Martin Luther King.
Not the new thing where they, what do they call it, up there on Figueroa?
Convention Center.
The old convention center down on Exposition in 30-something. Yeah. It was a Democratic convention. I really don't know what. Okay, that's when it was then. Eleanor Roosevelt was there? Right. Came out and talked about the King. Yes. Now, why we were there, I don't remember either, but I'm sure it was a very thrilling experience for me because it's the first time I ever met Martin Luther King. And I was certainly very impressed. I don't think my feet hurt at all. That was a 24-hour thing around the clock, too. I had a job I was working swimsuit at, you guys, I don't know where, none of these airplane factories. Because I went to work at about 4 o'clock and I got off at 12. I went there from work and I walked the picket line until I think I left there about 3, gave myself an hour to get ready to go back to work. Yeah, we walked right around the clock there. It wasn't so bad on the weekend, but it was too hard when we went to work. But I did it. It was only for a few days, I don't remember how many days. It wasn't very long. But he did it that way. It was a real nice thing because the neighbors that lived around there brought, some lady brought nice chicken dinners. Yeah. And I guess people want Kool-Aid. And there was a group of students from Berkeley. There were teachers talking down there. And they stayed there. Just think, at that time, Los Angeles was safe enough that they bought sleeping bags and they took turns, you know, and they would sleep on sleeping bags up there on the grass, not at the convention service. Yeah. Gee, it's not nice. Just think, now that was in 1950. I could never have thought of that money. And then several other times that Martin Luther King came over here, but he, it's different. Different things on it. I don't remember what it was. I certainly know what the end objective was, but I don't remember what each particular action was supposed to accomplish or what brought about that particular big thing. It certainly was my privilege and my pleasure to work with Martin Luther King.
Are you ready for
that? No. No, God, he's always commanded. He was very, very busy too, you know, just, he would come out to walk with us and end up class and everything, you know, he couldn't get close. He was very strict, but he made sure that he took hands and spoke to all of us. He made sure he did that, but he was interrupted constantly. And he was at one of the training sessions. They trained us, that's when they used to throw the hot coffee on you, you know. He was at the first one, that was the UCRC, a lot of it is, brainwashing is not a good term, but I think it's getting you ready, you know, a lot of it is just talk, getting you ready. He was at the first session, which, you know, which was, he did the talk, and then later on they, you know, you do the little, well, I suppose they have a name for it now, they don't call it anything else. Somebody would call your names and hit you or spill hot coffee. That was just less, but not hot enough to do any real damage. So, and then you were supposed not to react. And the ones who reacted violently, they put them in the office. That's what Martin Luther King said. We have a place for you too. We have a place. There's a place for everybody in the civil rights movement. If you can't tell, you know, he's always just the need not to start back, not to hate, not to start back. Very inspiring. And the ones who couldn't, you know, who had the hate, there's still a place for them. If they would find a place, you know, there's still a place for you in the movement. But they didn't want to come to the clock. They didn't want you to be the first one to sit at the lunch counter. first week. I think it's fun too. It's real serious business, but a lot of fun. And met a lot of real nice people, a lot of friends. I always passed the test. I've always been a coward. I wouldn't react to anybody. You know, I don't want to be. Really teach you how to protect yourself. If the police did a lot of beating them, you know, how to protect yourself and what not to do, you know, don't touch the policeman, don't, you know, just do the best you can, don't argue with the police and things like that. They're good advice. I'm sure we never had really exciting ticket lines here in that there was a lot of violence, although there was from time to time. I remember those, I started to say clowns, I'm wrong, they were the Nazis. Charged the one of our ticket lines. I don't know, we were down at the federal building if I remember right. And some people did get hurt. They came in and charged the ticket line. There wasn't very much that could be done. And unfortunately, in cases like that, the police took an awful lot of time to get to where the action was. And a lot of times they mistakenly beat up everybody. It was very difficult for them to distinguish who the aggressors were. You know, you're laying down there on the sidewalk and somebody's got his foot on your neck, kicking the hell out of you, but it's hard for them to tell which one, so they end up arresting everybody. And not all the time. Some of the police are very, you know, decent people, but that happens a lot of times. And in the different sessions, what they call the pain sessions, people were, the ones who were going to participate were prepared for things like that. They were, I would say, very well prepared. I always felt like we learned a lot more than we ever used, than we would ever expect to use in Los Angeles. But a lot of those people went to the South. Unfortunately, or fortunately, as the case may be, had young children, a family, and a job. And some of them were not hindered by those responsibilities, and they were able to travel around the media. This was a wonderful thing, but they needed us, you know, with families too, as Martin Luther King said. There was a place for everybody, and he certainly was sincere. And a lot of people that started out real violent and just felt like they couldn't control themselves, it was, you know, the injustice was too much, and they just had to react, became very calm, sensible picketers after that, and were able to, you know, to control the others who, in case anything, when the incident came up, we might have a tendency to react in a manner that we weren't trained to react in. But it was very interesting. It was very, very nice. And I certainly appreciated being a part of it. And I was very impressed with Martin Luther King, as was everyone else. He certainly paid attention when he spoke. The station. And he spent a lot of time in jail. He certainly was the person to give out the information on what to do and what not to do. And I think it's kind of, I certainly wouldn't use the term strange, should I? But he was a very religious man, and Caesar Chavez, he's following the same, you know, nonviolent pattern. He's also a very religious man. And I think that religion was very much a part of the civil rights movement. It never could have without the churches and the people, you know, as we say, men of goodwill. There never could have been the changes that were made. I don't think we'll ever go back to segregated lunch counters, but they should tell some really nice jokes to it. It was really, I'm trying to think of the one where the fella was going to, he went to integrate the lunch counter, and they finally got around to serving him. He couldn't, the food was so bad he couldn't eat the food. He said, well, he never really wanted to eat there anyway, he just wanted to sit at the counter. You know, that's not the joke, it was real funny, but I've forgotten. So he was going, I've forgotten. But they had all kinds of jokes like that, you know, too. That they used to make jokes all the time. Which is, I guess, you know, you have to laugh once in a while, otherwise you stay in tears, it's a sad thing too. But I don't think we'd ever go back to segregated lunch counters. I don't see us moving, you know, forward to we still have segregated schools and job opportunities.